I'm terrified of being abducted by aliens. Oh my god.
Engage.
The Rancor's Brothel. Great Scott. Shazam.
Get off my plane.
Hello, and welcome to The Rancor's Brothel. I'm your co-host, Matt.
And I'm your co-host, Cody.
And today we're going to walk down several rabbit holes. Number one in the headlines that we are going to talk about in a little bit is the return of X-Files. We're going to talk about the past of X-Files as well and what we loved.
Sounds cool? Good. Yeah.
but for right now, like we do every week, let's hear the geek movie of the week. this week's geek movie of the week is
Pirates of the Caribbean, because Matt watched them this weekend.
I watched all four of them. I watched two on Friday, two on Saturday, both like at night, like late. Didn't go to bed till 4 or 5 in the morning on either of those days.
Nice.
Yeah, that's how I roll. Did you see these in the theater when you first saw them?
I'm trying to remember. I didn't see the first one in theaters. I definitely saw the second one in theaters. I don't think I saw the third one in theaters. I think we went with the group on the second one. I like the movies. They're good. They're just not good enough to draw me into the theater.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very rare that I go to the movie theaters anyway because I don't like people.
I completely understand and agree with you. The first one I didn't see in the theaters because I was like, are you going to make it out of a ride? Seriously? Let's make a movie out of a ride. Okay. Can't wait for The Beast from Paramount. That's a King's Island joke. Anyway, but it got me. So I made sure and watched, I went to theaters and saw the second and third one. And then again, when the fourth one came out, I said, there's no way that could be good. There's no Orlando Bloom. There's no Kiara. It's going to be awful. And you know what? It wasn't awful, but it wasn't great either.
Well, I mean, at that point, they are sort of beating a dead horse, I think. What I thought made it really great is that you don't get, I mean, short of going back and watching Errol Flynn movies, like, you don't get pirate movies.
You don't. Like,
it's Treasure Island remakes, it's Errol Flynn movies, and that's it. And I think that what they really proved is that there's a storyline there. There's an adventure storyline of swashbuckling, of swinging around on ropes, you know, above ships and all that. And that's what I really love about that first movie. I mean, there's a little bit of, you know, fantasy, horror, what I don't know exactly how you want to term the pirates or, you know.
Yeah,
but
there's the magic, you know. It is a complete fantasy story.
Yeah. But I think that at the core of it, it's a movie about pirates and having fun with pirates. And you've got, you know, a hard-nosed woman, and you've got the guy that's in love with her, and then you've got the crazy drunk guy that's hanging out with them, and it sort of, you know, it makes a nice little triumvirate, it's a nice package, and they tell a fun swashbuckling story, and that's what's great about the first one.
Yeah, and with the difference, the play between Keira Knightley and Orlando Bloom's characters, you get the Dread Pirate Roberts kind of a scenario from, what's that called? Oh my god. I'm drawing a blank. The Princess Bride.
Yeah.
You know, where he's completely in love with her, but she's way above his station. He feels that he can't be familiar with her. And, you know, throughout the movie, that gradually lessens. It's the same story.
Yeah.
In a sense. I mean, he's not pretending to be a pirate or anything like that. He really becomes one.
But, I mean, it's neat because if you look at those old movies. I actually have more experience with Errol Flynn pirate movies than I do modern pirate movies, but there aren't a lot to choose from. I mean, the whole action, the swinging back and forth from ships, the explosions from the cannons, it's very, it's a nautical adventure, it's flights of fancy, and it's something we don't really see today. We don't think a lot about those sort of, you know, 1800s nautical adventures, but there's still a lot of fun. It shows that there was still, you can take an old story, an old type of story, and rehash it in a new way, and it can still be fun.
Absolutely. You know, it's pirate movies and westerns. You just don't get that much of nowadays. Yeah. And then, of course, what did Johnny Depp do with Gore Verbinski? Pirate movies and a Western. So,
and I also think that you can't deny that, and it's probably why the fourth movie works, air quotes. I mean, Johnny Depp, regardless of what you think about his career, Johnny Depp is an amazing actor.
Yeah, he's a wonderful character actor.
He is, but what's great about him is that normally when you hear of a character actor, you think of, let's say, Sylvester Stallone as a character actor. He's a big, tough guy. He always plays a big, tough guy.
Except in Copland.
But he's never any good unless he's playing a big, tough guy. Like, that's his
Copland
shtick.
Copland was a good movie. He was good in that.
It's his shtick. He can't... I mean, you've got a lot of people like that in Hollywood who they have a shtick. They do their shtick. Anytime they go outside of that realm, you realize that they're not a very diverse actor. Whereas Johnny Depp is in, you know, romance films, he's in comedies, he's in serious horror films, and he's got a lot of depth to his acting.
Johnny Depp. That's where you went.
It's true. But it's totally a fact. I think anything you watch with him is going... You are going to get 110% from him as an actor, regardless of what the film subject may be.
Okay.
And that's why, I mean, he sells movies because of that.
I loved him in Tusk. Have you seen Tusk yet?
Not yet.
So everybody go watch Tusk. Johnny Depp's character in Tusk is, for a low-budget movie, it's as over-the-top as his Mad Hatter. It's just so, so funny. You'll like it. You'll probably like Tusk anyway, as a film buff.
I would say I've been wanting to see it. It's just one of those things where it's like...
It's at the Redbox now, so you could probably get a hold of it.
I need to Redbox more. Yeah. I just have the issue of that if you were to go look at my pile of DVDs, I was doing it this weekend because I was like, I kind of want to watch a movie. So I was sifting through movies. I did watch a movie this weekend. I just realized that. What did I watch? I don't even remember. I watched Snatch. That's what I watched.
Nice.
But I was looking through my pile of movies and I'm like, I bought this like 2 years ago and it's still in the cellophane because I just haven't opened it and watched it yet.
Oh my gosh.
I'm terrible at that. That breaks my heart. Well, you know, life comes up. You do other things. It's okay.
Yeah, listening from the young man, newlywed, no children. Wait till life takes a dump on your chest. You're going to want to watch movies. You're like, I need the respite of this. Okay, so that's Geek Movie of the Week, is the Pirates of the Caribbean series. Like I said, I watched them. I was out in the garage scrapping old computers all night, and I just put those movies in and you know, had something in the background and enjoyed it, so.
That's one of those movies you could watch with kids, and as long as they're not going to get afraid of the creepy pirates and, you know...
The zombie pirates or the Kraken.
Right, exactly. That's...
Bill Nighy is disgusting in this film.
That's true.
He's so gross.
Very true. Yeah, that's what I didn't like about the later films. It kind of got really, really weird and mythosy, and I'm like, let's just go back to the pirate thing. Let's do the pirate thing, because it's fun. But
you know. Did you know when you first saw the first one that there was going to be, like, dead pirates?
Like I said, I don't think I watched it until, a year and a half after it came out. So I knew that there was going to be some sort of weirdness. Did I know that they were going to, like, you know, walk across the bottom of the sea? No. Do you know that totally affected, I don't know what zombie movie it was, one of Romero's movies. He was going to do that. What's the one where the zombie's suddenly intelligent and they start acting
together?
Land
of the Dead.
Is it Land of the Dead?
Yeah.
He wanted to do that, I think, in Land of the Dead. And he was sitting there watching, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean. He's like, oh, son of a... And he's like, I can't do that now because they're all going to think I was ripping them off.
So he just had them crossed underwater. That was it. Fair enough.
But he wanted the same sort of slow pan as you see them walking across the waters. You're like, oh my god, the water barrier doesn't stop zombies.
There is a movie called Zombies with a Z at the end in which a zombie takes on a shark. It's pretty good because they took an actor, and it's an old like 70s, 80s movie. Took an actor, put him in a shark suit, put whatever makeup that could make him look like a zombie that would stay on underwater. And they somehow were able to give him some kind of a breathing apparatus that you can't see. You don't really see the zombie's face in the underwater shots. But a guy just walks up and punches a shark in the face. Huh. And they fight. And it's a little piece of amazing. And it's a foreign film, so PETA can, you know, drop dead. And then punch a shark. That was a pretty fun fight, though.
I mean, punching sharks, all in all, is a good way to you know, if you're going to have some ridiculousness, punch a shark.
Well, that's what they say, like, that's what they say you should do if you get bit by a shark, is punch it in the nose. Like, I'm going to try to claw its eyes. Forget the nose.
Well, I think fight or flight is probably going to trigger flight more than fight.
After it's bit onto you, you're not going to flight.
I think you still try and flight. You're not going to be successful, but, you know.
That's true. That's very true.
You're still going to be like, ah, and swimming away.
99% of shark attacks happen in 3 feet of water. That's because we don't go swimming in the middle of the ocean. Duh. If we just, everybody hated the beaches, and when we wanted to go swimming, we would take a boat out to where it's like a mile deep. Then, yeah, guess what? 99% of shark attacks would happen in a mile deep of water. Like, that's ridiculous.
Correlation and causation.
One of these things is not like the other.
Science.
What you been reading, sir?
Well, for me, I got a really nice Amazon gift card from my mother.
Oh, cool.
For Christmas, because she said, "What do you want?" And I'm like, socks? I don't know, because I'm hard to buy for. So she's like, "Here, get yourself something." So about a week and a half ago, I got I got Fiasco, which I talked about last week on the podcast, which is a small group role-playing game. Got to play that. Not too bad. Jeff Thorpe, we're totally going to try that out, so that's going to have to be a thing. I got In the Dust of This Planet, which is one of the philosophy books that inspired True Detective.
I saw it on your table back over here.
Yeah, I haven't started it. Is it
the horror philosophy?
Well, yeah, the idea is that it looks into nihilism, and this whole overbearing thought that there is nothing after us, that there is no continuance, so why exist at all? And, of course, a lot of people talk about nihilism and Nietzsche, and it's like, is this, you know, a hopeful thing, or is it just the fact that you could cast off the shackles of religion and whatnot? You know, there's a whole argument there. But that book is supposed to look into modern horror and see the rise of nihilism as a common theme in modern horror, and sort of extrapolate how the modern, you know, how people today feel about nihilism as a concept. Is it more present today than it was 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 50 years ago, etc.?
Answer the question.
I haven't read the book yet. Well, it's interesting that if you're really interested in it and you don't want to read, there's a recent Radiolab episode titled In the Dust of This Planet.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really interesting is he wrote this book like 3 or 4 years ago and didn't really, you know, it's a philosophy book, so no one's going to buy it. And it's a philosophy book about horror, so even fewer people are going to buy it. And he, the guy who wrote it, suddenly started finding pop culture references. Like, In the Dust of This Planet is apparently on the back of Jay-Z's leather jacket in a music video recently. Like, the phrase In the Dust of This Planet in his font.
Mm-hmm.
And certain phrases of his were paraphrased on True Detective and stuff like that. So it's almost like he's proving himself through his book, because a lot of the concepts in his book are showing up in ways that can be directly linked to the book.
That's very interesting. Huh.
So I won't talk too much about it, but I feel like this is a book that you and I should both read at some point and then have a discussion about it.
Oh, God, I don't know if I could choke through anything about nihilism.
You watch True Detective, that's all about nihilism.
Yeah, I watched a well-acted, good show with the best nude scene of 2014 in it. I didn't sit and have to read a book about nihilism.
But it's going to be about horror movies. I'll read it first, we'll see how it goes.
Okay, I'll give you that.
But I'm really excited to read it. And it's supposed to be volume one of a series.
Cool.
So I'm hoping he's going to write some more. And I also picked up a copy of the 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons PHP, which is pretty awesome as well. Not all the way through that, but it is pretty sweet.
Very cool.
Good rule changes. Simplifying. If anyone out there was wondering, you should totally jump on, because it's a great time to learn. Because as I was telling Matt and he laughed, this version puts the R back in the RPG. It's really, really good to get back to the storytelling and less so much number crunchiness, which is cool.
Sounds all right. You know, like when I read a book, it's got like, I need fiction. I can't read nonfiction. Seems too much like school.
What?
Reading nonfiction.
Oh.
Well. I mean, a gamer's guide is technically nonfiction. It's a you know, it's an instruction manual. But, like, your philosophy book as well. Like, I don't know if I could ever read a philosophy book. I don't even think I read my philosophy book when I was in philosophy class.
Well, I think it's just good to, because they're taking, you know, extremely high-level concepts and trying to tack it onto something so that you can comprehend it, as opposed to just talking about, you know, ethics and morality and Schrodinger's cat and what have you.
In the Republic.
Yeah.
But whatever.
All right, so you want to talk about the one comic you've read that is so awesome?
Well, I mean, I've read a couple comics lately. Like, I reread Kingdom Come because we did it at the book club.
Right.
We're doing The Last Class. Does that sound right?
I don't know if I know that one.
It's, I don't even remember the name now. It's what something Lucas Patterson reads. That's the next one, February 7th at the Androids Dungeon. We'll be there recording all day. Cody won't. He's got to work because he's lame.
That's literally probably the only Saturday I'll work for the next, like, 4 months.
That's funny. So that's going on. So I read Kingdom Come. I've been reading Prince Lestat by Anne Rice. Really enjoying it.
Nice.
But, you know, got a 3-year-old and I have various hobbies that are extraordinarily time consuming.
Well, maybe if you stop watching Pirates of the Caribbean, you could read more.
Well, no, the point of watching Pirates of the Caribbean, Jeff Thorpe, last week after recording with you, he called me up and said, "Hey, I've got some stuff for you to scrap." And I was like, "Oh, okay, cool, great, what?" Well, his company over time has gone through and had to buy several new computers for people that work there, and all the old computers got stored in his office. And so he's always complaining about it. And they're like, "No, there's sensitive information on the hard drives. We can't just throw these out." He's like, "Fine, whatever." Well, I start scrapping. So he tells them, and they mulled it over for like a month. And they were like, "Okay, your friend can come get these if he signs a document stating he'll destroy the hard drives." And I was like, "Yeah." So like my garage, like I have like 20 computers, all just old, nasty. 1996, nice. Like the external hard drive, 1 gigabyte external hard drive that I found from 1996 was amazing. Like, there's so many antique electronics. Like, they're not antiques, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It was really fun. So, I had the movie on while I was taking apart computers because I got a job to do. I could take all those hard drives out.
Well, you know.
And dismantle them.
Audiobook? You could do audiobook.
No.
Yeah.
No, I need to watch something.
I'm telling you, audiobook, man.
Well, why don't they make a visual book? You know, a movie. Then I'll watch it. Anyway, Prince Lestat is really fun. It's going in a very, I feel, different direction than her past books. However, I'm noticing, do you read any of the Vampire Chronicles?
It's been a long time, but has, yeah.
She had a book come out called Blackwood Manor, which was a sequel to another book called Merrick. And it was probably one of my favorite of the Vampire Chronicles. And the two people, or two characters that starred in it were, what was their names? Rowena Mayfair and Tarquin Blackwood. And I just loved the characters and loved their, just loved reading about them. And they're the only vampires not in this book. Like, Prince Lestat is like a who's who of the Vampire Chronicles. I was sitting in Burger King eating my dinner tonight before I came over here, and they killed a main character, and I did not see it coming. So that was the end of like the second act, because it's done in 3 small books,
right,
inside the book. So kind of want to get home and read now.
There you go.
So let's get the show on the road. The one comic book I read this week, went to a Star Wars party Wednesday for the release of Jason Aaron's and Marvel's Star Wars #1, which then I took home, sat on the toilet and pooped and read half of it. And then when I set it down, I didn't pick it up again that night. I was going to finish it the next day. My son put his wet boots on it, his snow boots. So now I have a
table, huh?
Yeah. Well, mommy said, "Take your coat off and put it on the table." And in his head, he thought coat and boots, because he's 3. So I now have a wonderfully water-damaged Star Wars #1. So actually, if you just want it to read. So I sat and finished it after it dried out. Really fun story. So, FYI, for those of you not in the know, which I'm sure everybody that listens to a show called The Rancor's Brothel probably knows something about Star Wars. Marvel was purchased by Disney, and then more recently Star Wars was purchased by Disney, so now they're all in the same wheelhouse. So let's put the Star Wars comic line, we'll reboot it, and we'll put it, you know, print it ourselves, cut out the middleman of Dark Horse, if you will. As these new movies are being developed, Star Wars 7, you know, we had a leak where they kind of let out some of the plot action of the film, and we know from those leaks, so spoiler alert, Luke hasn't been seen since the destruction of the second Death Star, since the little party with the Ewoks and seeing Ghost Dad. Not Bill Cosby. But you know what I mean.
Hey, 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 I'm a date rapist.
God. sorry. He's been missing for the 40 years in between, you know, that and then the present time. Or 30 years, whatever it's been. So you're like, what are they going to do with Star Wars? Because they, with the comic book, because they want to bring all the have all the characters that you love in the comic.
Right.
So what are they going to do? Because we know now that after Jedi, Luke's gone for 30 years. We're not going to have Luke Skywalker in this book, but when you look at the cover, there they all are. Wonder what they're doing. Wonder if, oh, are they just going to retell the movie for the first few issues? Okay, whatever. No, it's the Shadows of the Empire years. It's the... no, wait, that was Empire to Jedi, wasn't it?
You, I don't remember.
Okay, for those of you...
I think so.
In the Star Wars timeline, between the first film and Empire, is 3 years takes place. So, this is in that 3 years. This is after the Battle of Yavin, when they blew up the first Death Star. Yet before, you know, they go to Hoth.
Yeah.
So, pretty fun. And I think everybody should know that when they pick this book up. You need to know what you're looking at here. So, that's it.
Nice.
So, that's your timeline. I won't say anything about the story because Cody hasn't read it. But it was good. It was fun. Art was great. The writing is exactly what you want. You know?
Well, Jason Aaron is... I mean, I always talk about my list of... If there were a serial killer out there going to murder all comic book writers, Jason Aaron is on my list of five that I would have to, you know, somehow save in this bizarre horror movie 7 remake. I don't know. He's the one I don't want with a head ending up in a box, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
What's
here.
In the box?
So, I'll tell you what's in the box.
I mean,
it's a bunch of roofies I ordered from Mexico.
What was that?
It's Fat Albert.
That's so weird.
It's a Fat Albert.
I know where you're going, but it's still weird. It's still strange.
Hey, hey, hey. Don't fall asleep near me. I got creepy hands.
Oh, God.
What?
You. No. I was going to say, his run on Thor, God of Thunder was really, really good, especially the first 12 issues. It was fantastic. So if you're reading Jason Aaron Star Wars number one, you're like, what else has he done? He builds all kinds of worlds and... writes lots and lots of great comics that we probably shouldn't all go into now, but lots of great comics.
So check him out. Check him out for sure. Mm-hmm. And check out Marvel Star Wars. It's a $4.99 book. It's a $5 Marvel book. And it's going to be $5 an issue, it looks like.
Man.
Yeah.
I wonder why.
Because it's Star Wars. People will pay $5 for
it. I suppose that's true.
You know?
That's kind of...
I could still get Spider-Man for $2.99. If I got to pay $5 for Star Wars, I'll do it.
Yeah.
Reluctantly, but I mean, for a guy like myself who's trying to collect the original Marvel Star Wars run from, like, was it 77 to 83 they made those, you know, I kind of have to.
That's understandable.
Yeah, you know. All right, let's talk about the meat and potatoes this week. And that meat and potatoes, what?
Jeff Thorpe and I were right.
No, Jeff Thorpe and you were not right.
We were right. We called it
all
psychic.
Over the news. All over the news is that, you know, X-Files. What? Don't take my fidget away. all over the news is that X-Files is returning in 2015, which you said last week. Oh my God, that'd be so cool to see like older Scully and Mulder. And what are they doing now?
To be fair, I thought it would be cooler to have a reboot to try and remake the show. But I'm okay with them trying to remake the show.
Hey, you know, whatever works, right? The interesting part is that on the Nerdist a week ago, Gillian Anderson was on, and they were talking to her, just their regular interview, and it was a very enjoyable show. She is really funny. She's really funny and interesting, so it was cool to listen to. They decided to start the major rumor that The X-Files is coming back in 2015. They said, if we can get this to hit enough news outlets, then the marketing at Fox will see that there'd actually be an audience for it, because of the clamor on the internet, and it will force them then to make it happen, which is what has now happened, because now Fox confirmed. They flat out just said, okay, everybody listening, if you Can it all get this? Don't tweet it at Fox. Just tweet it out there. David Duchovny, Gillian Anderson, and Chris Carter have signed on for X-Files 2015 as a miniseries or whatever they had said, or whatever, a show on Fox, but not right. not a movie. And they let it ride. And so then the next day, when that episode came out, you started seeing these things creeping up. Then Fox gets on and says, okay, let's do it. Because, again, the marketing people saw the rumor and said, oh, there's an audience for this. We could make another $1 billion. Let's do it.
Because they would.
Because they would. And so now, I mean, the sphere of influence of the Nerdist has created the X-Files 2015 for us.
Well, but did she at any point during that episode talk about how it was a possibility at all? Because,
no.
See, that's the thing, is that I've been reading this, because I saw some of what you're talking about, but I also saw things that said that they've been in talks for months about the potential for it, which might be PR baloney, but at the same time, it to me, it's interesting.
And they could be in talks in the way that, like, you and me are two mid-level guys that work at Fox. Man, you know, we're having our lunch. You know what'd be really cool? If they bring back the X-Files, I'd watch that. And you're like, yeah, I'd watch that too. Man, let's start a file for that. You know, let's tuck that away as a possibility. Maybe we could reboot it. And they take it to their boss. And their boss is like, hey, it's a nice idea, you know. Let me see a budget. Let me see an operating schedule. Let me see what you would do. Well, then there you go. They do that for the next couple of months. Then they're in talks for months.
Well, I mean, because
even if they don't go to Duchovny or Anderson.
What's interesting to me is that I read a lot of online articles about it. And you get varying things, you know. You get the clickbait titles where it's like, it's for sure coming back. And then you're like, well, they've just been in talks for months. You know, it's like, okay, well, that's not exactly what I clicked on. But congratulations, you got your 3 cents in ads or whatever from me clicking on it. But some of them talked about that it's... apparently it has a lot to do with Netflix and Hulu,
mm-hmm.
because X-Files have been on Netflix for quite a while. It only recently hit Hulu, I want to say, maybe 6-ish months ago, 8-ish months
Which
ago.
Which is really interesting, because Hulu is partially owned by Fox. Hulu was a collaboration between CBS and Fox, and I think NBC as well.
I think a lot of people don't realize this, how much of a conglomerate Fox is. Like, it's huge.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if the parts of Fox that own Hulu might be different from 20th Century Fox, might be different from Fox Sports, might be different from Fox News. So even though they're all under one corporate umbrella, I don't know how hard the talks are to make that happen.
That's a good point.
But
it'd be really funny if when they say that they were in talks for months, it was actually a couple of the guys at Fox Sports. And they were like, man, we should get David Duchovny to come commentary. Like,
no. But they...
commentate, not commentary.
they actually... one of the articles said... I'm trying to remember what it was now. Something to the effect that... the reason why 24 was brought back for a season or whatever it was is because when Fox allowed that to go on Netflix, Netflix shared with them the number of watches that it was getting. I don't know if they get some sort of kickback because of how many times it's been watched or anything, or if it's just a blanket, we'll pay you this much to stream your content. But the numbers came back, and that's supposedly that and people's appeal in 24 was why that show suddenly came back. Apparently, The X-Files has the same amount, if not more, appeal. And then adding it to Hulu, it's reached an even broader audience. Apparently, a lot of people are rewatching that old, you know, the original run.
Hmm.
See, I'm calling it the original run because I'm propagating the X-Files 2016. This is one thing pointed out. X-Files, Twin Peaks could both be on air 2016.
Oh, my God. That would be very interesting. I never watched Twin Peaks, though. Because really? That's available on Netflix right now.
It used to be. I don't know if it still is.
You know, I bet what? They would. If they're building up to putting the next one on, they would probably keep it on Netflix because you want to garner an audience for people like me.
We should do too young. Exactly. We should do an episode on Twin Peaks because that is a great show.
Oh, can I watch a couple of them first?
Yeah. No. We'll watch the whole thing. We should watch
the whole thing.
It's like it was only like a season and a half. It's not that long.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Twin Peaks is like 30 somebody's gonna. Episodes? I don't even think it's that many. Somebody's gonna yell at me somewhere, but I want to say it's like 15, 18, maybe 30? It's not very long.
Unlike it only ran the X-Files, which had 9 seasons and 202 episodes.
Not going to lie, I've been working on the X-Files for like 2.5 years now. Because I'll get in the mood, it'll be dark and, you know, creepy and windy out, and I'll watch like 4 episodes, and then I won't pick it up for like 2 months.
Wow, when you put Twin Peaks into Google, the first thing that comes up is a restaurant in Milwaukee.
No, that is actually, it's funny that you mentioned that, because they just built one of those, I think, relatively recently in, like, Fishers, maybe? It's like a knockoff Hooters, or like a Sheboygan version of Hooters or something.
Two seasons, 30 episodes.
I'm telling you.
I said, like, 30 episodes. I'm amazing.
Okay, so maybe you're right. It didn't feel like 30 episodes, let me tell you. Let me tell you that.
I'm a golden god. Original run, April 8th, 1990 to June 10th, 1991. So, I mean, they say it was two seasons, but it was literally 13 months, 14 months.
Yeah, it's a, and I mean, it's a David Lynch type show, and it's really creepy and awesome, and I want to watch that.
There was a feature film?
Yes, there was a feature film that was supposed to wrap it all up. It's all about the mystery of this young girl in this town who has been murdered.
Yes, but Twin Peaks, Fire Walk With Me.
But apparently you never, I mean, it's one of those things where the story just continues and continues, and the net gets cast larger, and more intrigue, and more bizarreness, and bizarre midgets talking backward in dreams, and...
Well, hey, Kyle MacLachlan, I love you on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. You're my best, like, horrible father.
Now, can you imagine, both those shows being back on air in 2016?
Oh, I mean, I know nothing about Twin Peaks, so...
Well, Twin Peaks is like The X-Files, but not as much aliens.
Not as much aliens, so it's more like mythology?
Like
when you break down the X-Files into three subsets. There's the alien conspiracy.
Yes.
There is mythology, and then there is cryptozoology. Now beyond that you get some little subheadings. So like under cryptozoology, that could include, say, a human that can cause lightning, played by Giovanni Ribisi, my favorite episode.
That also has Jack Black in it. That's a really interesting episode.
Yeah. Or, you know, and the conspiracy, like, you know, they, one time they showed the cigarette smoking man was the guy that shot JFK. That goes under alien conspiracy because it was all part of that interconnected web.
Right.
So, you know, there's the three main ones. The Ponce de Leon, Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides episode, you know, that's kind of more of the mythology section. Yeah. The vampire episode is the mythology section.
I would say that's probably a good way to subdivide them.
That's the, well,
you could argue the headings, but I think for the most part you're on the right track there.
Gillian Anderson on the Nerdist, she didn't flat out say like you put all the episodes into three things, but she kept referring to she would call them the mythology episodes were her favorite to do. And I was like, wow, okay, that makes perfect sense. You know, so there is those three kinds of categories most of the show.
Yeah, well, like I told, Jeff and I were talking about last week, it's essentially, it's a monster of the week. Like, that's what that show is. It's a monster of the week. It really is. Like, it's got a lot of complexity, and it's got a lot of threaded storylines, and it's got some creep stuff. But really, at its core, it's not all that different from shows that have been around for years. The difference is that Chris Carter was really freaking good at making it. That's the difference. And the acting is great, and they got great, you know, guest stars, and the way he shot it, and it's fantastic.
You know, think too, like Vince Gilligan, the creator of Breaking Bad and head writer, was a writer on X-Files.
Yeah.
You know, that's actually where he met Bryan Cranston, who did an episode.
I don't remember what episode Bryan Cranston did.
She said it on Nerdist. What was it? Bryan Cranston did the episode. I don't remember.
Yeah, that's all right.
Now I'm upset. I'm going to Google it.
But
what episode of X-Files was Bryan Cranston on? I don't know. That's my Troy voice. That's my fact checker Troy. It's how he sounds in my head. Which is funny because now he's on shows with us. In my head, as he's talking, I hear, "Hey, you guys are wrong." No, I'm really just doing that to get my friend mad at me.
Good job. I think it's probably effective.
Yeah, he threatens me a lot now. Did you ever watch Millennium?
A little bit, not very much.
I had no idea that that was a spinoff show. I remember when The Lone Gunman came out and had like two episodes I watched.
Well, they predicted 9/11, so that's probably one of the reasons why that show didn't continue. And it may not have been very good. But their first episode, because you're right, they only did like two or three episodes or something because it was getting no ratings. But like their episode was about a plane hitting the Twin Towers, and it came out like 3 months before 9/11 or something like that.
Oh my God.
And about how they were rushing to stop it. I mean, there are a lot of... Tom Clancy wrote a book about it. Tom Clancy, actually, when he was in... Because in the Clinton administration, he was in a think tank. And one of the things that he said that you need to be careful for, of course, this was in the 90s, he's like, I would be worried about terrorists hijacking planes and then crashing them into secure sites. Like, there was a whole workup in this think tank, because that's how Tom Clancy got a lot of his insider information of how, you know, the government works and acts and, you know, certain responses and so forth and... due to national security. And he wrote it in several books, and I want to say that book came out right before 9/11 too. There, he wrote a book where a plane crashes into a building as part of a terrorist conspiracy.
Really? You know what, there were 13 episodes of The Lone Gunman.
Really?
The original run, March 4th through June 1st. So they must have played the whole first season, but it just never got picked back up.
I mean, The Lone Gunman were weird.
They were, but they were like your favorite part, kinda.
Well, I think depending on who you are.
Okay.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I like the Lone Gunman, but they were like the uber nerd of the show. Mulder was like the cool kid compared to them.
Yeah. Like, they all loved Agent Mulder. Agent porn-obsessed Mulder. I always thought that was a weird thing to add in, because you get, I mean, very little tidbits of information about them as characters for a long time.
Yeah.
It takes a very long time to develop them as characters. You just see them as the suits. But very early on, you learn that he likes to watch porn.
Well, but I wonder how much that's a personal jab at David Duchovny.
Because he is a sex addict.
Yeah. Well, and also at the same time that he was on The X-Files, I don't know how close to the run it would be. He was on a...
He was on Red Shoe Diaries.
Yeah, he was on a softcore pornography on Cinemax or something, one of those channels late at night.
Again, they talk about this in The Nerdist, and Chris Hardwick said, I like to think that David Duchovny's character from the Red Shoe Diaries was actually Fox Mulder, like on his off days. Like, that's what he does, is he goes out and pretends to write, but really he watches weird, wild sex acts.
Well, because you got to think, with the popularity of the Fox show, him doing that sort of cable, you know, TNA show, like, sooner or later, you got some crossover, and it probably became very big news that, you know, Fox Mulder was doing this. So if I was a writer, I'd be like, yeah, I'd make fun of that. Why not? And I'm sure David Duchovny, being a sexaholic, would be like, yeah, sure, why not? It's like, let's make mention of it.
Oh, poor Tay Leone's vagina. Good gravy.
Man.
Hey, favorite episodes, like, of those three subheadings, what did you prefer?
I don't know. I mean, the alien conspiracy episodes I always liked. That was sort of my bread and butter, because there are so many... They do such a great job of threading them, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they do the classic thing of across seasons, but at the same time, I don't know if it was like mid-season breaks or what, but you would get alien conspiracy at the beginning of the season, you get it a couple places in the middle where you see the cigarette smoking man, like, we must do something about them, and then you get to the end and you're like, oh man, we're gonna finally learn the alien conspiracy, but no, they blew up the train car, or they, you know, they burnt the place to the ground, or, you know, they shot Mr. X, you know, they do stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it was great at keeping you on the edge of your seat, because you're like, this will finally be that moment. And you just know it can't happen. But it never got stale, though. You knew it was going to happen. It's the same thing about that monster movie of the week. Every week, you know there was going to be a monster, and they were going to fight it, and they were going to kind of win, but not really. But you still kept coming back for 200 episodes.
Yeah, absolutely. The alien conspiracy episodes were my least favorite, because... I'm terrified of being abducted by aliens. Like, you ever watch Fire in the Sky?
I don't think so.
Which is supposed to be an account of a real alien abduction. And the main character, when he wakes up aboard the ship, whatever the mothership, I don't know what you call it. He wakes up in kind of a pod. He gets out of it, and he looks into other pods, and there are dead people that just never woke up after they got abducted. And that would have been me, because I would have died of complete abject terror. Pooping and peeing everywhere, there would be claw marks on the inside of my pod. I would have just died.
See, I watched this show, and I told this story. I may have told you this before. I watched it at a really young age, so it was kind of impressionable on me because I would have nightmares and stuff.
X-Files?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I thought you meant that movie. I was like, you just said you didn't watch it.
No, not that movie. But there are a couple of episodes. I think there's an episode with vampires where their eyes glow green.
No, that's the Ponce de Leon one.
Is it?
Yeah.
No, there's a little kid standing outside where his eyes are glowing green.
Not a little kid. It's
now, I watched this in like 96 when it came out, so I may...
Yeah. No, the Fountain of Youth one, because the Fountain of Youth... It made them, the people from Ponce de Leon's ship, it made them hyper evolve. Because, you know, they were in a jungle, essentially, Florida. And so it made them, like, able to camouflage. They could blend in and stuff. Huh. Yeah, they were like these little immortal people. They were short. They were diminutive, if you will.
I just remember...
But their eyes glowed. I remember that.
I just remember as a kid, you know, being... 9, 10, 11 years old, and fighting my parents because I wanted to watch The X-Files. My dad was watching something else and was like, well, you can go in the other room and watch it because they had TV in the other room. So I remember watching it, and you think they've solved it, and it's all, you know, it's all resolved, and then it cuts to, like, just a, you know, just the camera sort of pans, and then you just see these two glowing eyes, and the episode's over because in The X-Files, you can never actually be sure you've got it, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember then walking out, and my mother was like, so what'd you think of those glowing green eyes? And just scared the living bejesus out of me. Nightmares of, you know, alien abductions and stuff. And I told the story, so I won't tell it again. But I actually constructed my fourth grade Valentine's Day diorama card box was actually an alien autopsy being performed by Mulder and Scully.
Please tell me that you had to go to the office and talk to the school psychologist.
I didn't, but it was really funny because the teacher from the other class across the hall came over because it was a contest to see who could win. And I've got, like, it was a tree, it was like a diorama, so I had, like, trees in the background, and there was a little UFO, and I had them looking over, like, this desiccated corpse. And I just remember her looking at me. She looks at the thing. Everyone else is pink and bright and says love and whatever. She looks down at that. She looks at me. She looks down at that. She looks up to me and she's just like, you're really weird. Just walked away. I'm like, thank you. I appreciate that.
That's amazing.
So strange.
I love that so much. Okay. Highlight episodes, favorite episodes in general that you recall now. Like, I haven't watched The X-Files since its run. You know,
yeah.
I had a VHS little box that I got for my birthday that had like a half of a season on it.
Mm-hmm.
So I watched those plenty, but what's some of your favorites?
There's actually a lot of really good ones in season one, which is I think why they continued, because what is it? There's one in season one that then goes on. What is it? It's one of the urban myths. I want to say Slenderman. It's not Slenderman. The guy who can stretch and contort, and he goes into vents and stuff, and he's like killing people in really weird ways because he can contort his body really thin. There's like three episodes with this guy, two or three episodes.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, because you just keep seeing eyes glow from like inside ventilation systems.
All right,
and
you
stuff.
And eyes glowing is freaking me out. I need you to stop with this eye glowing thing because I'm going to have nightmares.
Yeah, his eyes glow, like, yellow. They kind of look serpent-y.
Okay.
He's really, really... He's got a few really, really good episodes. But, yeah, he does the whole Super Stretch Armstrong thing. So, like, his hands will go through grates and stuff and loosen things. And he hibernates. That's what it is. He hibernates for 100 years or so, shows up, eats a bunch of, like, internal organs of people, and then hibernates again.
I don't remember this at all.
Yeah, it's like the third or fourth episode. That one's really good. I really like when they start getting to the alien-human hybrids and you get the black... I was calling them black oil. I can't remember what they were called.
Yeah, that, like, tarry thing, tarry substance.
Where, like, their eyes and stuff, and then if you hit them, they were, like, xenomorphs or whatever. They, like, poisoned you or something.
And that was when they brought in that alien assassin.
Yeah.
He had to stab in the back of the neck with that weird pen knife.
Yeah. Because there's somebody who tries to call Mulder, I think, in a phone booth or something in one of these episodes, and the guy like cuts himself and he like poisons the guy in the phone booth or something like that. Some really, really good stuff.
That's crazy.
But yeah, such a great show.
I'm trying to find a list of all the episodes. Wikipedia is failing me. You want to tell me some nerd didn't get on Wikipedia and list them all out? Seriously? Oh,
I'm sure they are somewhere. I think one of my favorite long-running shows. Right up there with Star Trek and Stargate SG-1. I think those are shows. Those are all shows that went like 8, 9, 10 well-deserved seasons, I feel.
There we go. I found the list. Hoorah. I want to run through just some of the titles here and see. Okay, Pilot, duh, Deep Throat, Squeeze. That's probably your...
Yep, that's him.
Conduit, The Jersey Devil.
Devil's not a bad episode.
Yeah. See, Shadows, Ghost in the Machine, Ice, Space, Fallen Angel, Eve, Fire, Beyond the Sea, Genderbender.
Beyond the Sea is creepy.
Which one's that?
Beyond the Sea is where...
is that where they're on the boat and they get older?
No. That's something different. I would recognize that title, too. No, Beyond the Sea is where her father dies, and she remembers him of the song Somewhere Beyond the Sea, and he keeps talking to her and helping her solve this case from, like, beyond the grave. Scully keeps dreaming of him, and he's, like, sitting in a chair, and that song keeps playing. Ew. Really creepy. Really creepy, but also, like, sort of sad, you know?
Yeah. Some of these, some of these titles are scary. The Calisari. What's that?
That one sounds familiar, but I can't place it off the top of my head.
Well, let's see. What's
might be about? Might be about cult. That feels very cultish to me.
The Calisari. That had Helen Clarkson in it. It was my very bad Al Gore impression. Yes, you know, that's just how he talks in my head.
Everyone talks in your head in very strange ways.
I know, right? You should hear your voice sometime.
Oh, boy.
It's messed up.
Probably.
This episode was watched by 7.9 million households on its initial broadcast. Eastern Medicine. Seems to be what it's about. Either way, I like the little superpower ones.
Yeah.
I always thought that was interesting. Some genetic anomaly. The one episode where a man was born with a tail. And he could shapeshift.
Gotcha.
Because there was a string of births of babies with tails is how they found him. Because he was he would look like somebody that... He was a very ugly man. And he would use his little power to make himself look attractive. And then women would have sex with him. And then they would make a baby. And so there's a string of baby. Like, the opening scene of the woman giving birth. And they pull the baby out. And, like, you see the baby's butt. And there's a straight-up tail. You know, and some people have a tail. Like a little nubbin of tailbone that's sticking the wrong way. But these things were like big tails.
Nice.
5-6 inches. So that was kind of a fun one.
Yeah, as I say, I figure for you the cryptozoology ones would be ones that you would really like.
Yeah, but I feel like they were kind of few and far between. You'd get like one a season, two a season.
Well, I think it's hard to...
You can't exhaust them.
Yeah, and they're also, the question is, you know, like the New Jersey Devil episode doesn't feel like a New Jersey Devil episode. The cryptozoology ones don't feel, they're not out there hunting Squatch, you know what I mean? But you, somehow they run across it at the same time, but it's hard to do that in a way that makes coherent sense in a storyline, you know what I mean?
Here's one called Avatar, written by David Duchovny. How fun. Sorry. I love this show. Now I want to go watch it all.
Now the question sucks. I asked Jeff this, so I'll ask you this week. Do you watch X-Files with the lights on or off?
I don't know. I haven't watched it since the 90s.
Gotcha.
Probably with the lights on because I was like 14.
Wrong. Gotta watch it with the lights off.
Why?
Because if
you're the weirdo that when you watch a horror movie, you sit alone in a room and shut the lights off.
I do.
That's suicide.
This is also why I don't watch many horror movies, because I scare the ever-living bejesus out of myself.
Yeah, I know. I'll spend the whole time in terror. Like, why would I do that to myself? I want to learn. I want to watch the story.
I do that because I'm afraid of other people seeing me afraid. So if I'm in the dark, I can't see myself being afraid, right?
You can always... When you're running through... I can always tell when the Christmas episode was, based on the title. There's one called Humbug. There's a Christmas Carol. This is funny.
No, I actually think, and you can see this, Jeff agreed with me last week, the way that it was shot, it's so intended to be watched with the lights off. You pick up so much more when you don't have ambient light in the room that you wouldn't normally get, which is really interesting, I think.
Right.
It's true. Watch an episode and then rewatch it with the lights off and you will actually see more, because Chris Carter, he understands light unlike any other television show I think I've ever seen.
Really?
Yeah. Like, if you watch his uses of light, stark white light and darkness and shadow darkness, you pick up a lot more definition when all the lights are off.
Medusa. Sorry.
No, there's some good ones. There's some great episodes.
Did you like when Doggett was on?
I didn't mind him. He's okay.
It's, I mean, like, oh, the T-1000's gonna be on. Cool.
At that point, I was obviously much older then, so I wasn't watching it on TV as much. I didn't catch as many of those episodes. But it still felt similar. I mean, I'll always be in love with, Mulder and Scully just because. But, like I said, I think that they knew the package worked, so switching out actors didn't matter. The monster movie of the week is still viable.
Yeah, I just had to think about it for a second. I mean, it really does. They had the right algorithm, you know, to make good TV and TV that could stick.
But yeah, like I said, if you go home and watch them, or you watch them on Saturday when you're in your garage, as I said, try and watch it with the lights off, because it will make it a totally different experience if you've never done that.
I don't really want to, especially in the garage with the lights off. That's
real. Oh, yeah.
I mean, like, I have a hard time watching horror movies in my garage, even with the lights on. Like, it's just scary.
Well, try and make it as indirect as possible, away from the screen. Because,
like, bring a lamp out and not don't have the overhead lights on.
Yeah, because like I said, when the screen is dark, you're gonna pick up a lot more shadowed movement. Because, like, that's the thing. People always used to complain that, you know, they'd run into the dark and they'd fight and they're like, oh, I can't see anything. It's like, turn the lights off. If you turn the lights off, you'll see the shadowed movement of, you know, Mulder's jacket, and he's struggling with something that has a weird shape that doesn't look right. And I mean, that's the way they did it, so that he didn't want, I think Chris Carter had a great understanding of his technical limitations, and he found really, really creative solutions for those technical limitations. And you miss some of that Hollywood, you know, effect without, when you watch it with bright white light behind you.
Guess that's true.
I think it'd be neat to bring it to modern day. Cell phones, the internet, oppressive governments and regimes. So many people out there with their UFO stories. Way more now, I feel like, than back then.
It's because they're real.
Do you know, I just saw this weekend, too. You know, this is all big time conspiracy theory here. They just released 11,000 reports of UFOs from 1960 to 1990 that the Air Force investigated. And apparently upwards of 800 of them, of those 11,000 they investigated, they still have no, they exhaustively, supposedly researched all of these cases. About 800 of them, they still don't know what happened. They're still not sure.
Oh, God, man. I know we've said it before. Do you believe in aliens? Do you believe we've been visited?
Well, I don't know. Have I talked about the Fermi paradox on the show before?
I don't think so.
Mathematically speaking, you know, like the chances of them being out there, they should be out there, you know, and we just haven't been contacted by them, which there's a lot of debate on that. I think it's possible. I do think it's very weird that we haven't been contacted in some way, shape, or form. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that there's, like, evil machinations to hide things, but I am surprised that we haven't been contacted by an outside.
Do you believe there was a Roswell crash?
There's a lot of evidence for it. There's a lot of evidence that something crashed. Whether it was aliens or not, I don't know. I think it'd be really, really hard. It's hard between three normal people to keep a secret about somebody, like, being pregnant or something. I think it'd be really hard to keep the aliens secret. Like, there are just so many people who would know, you would think. You know what I mean?
But then when that person knows and goes out and says, I met an alien! I freaking talked to him! They just look crazy. Nobody's going to believe that.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. It's true, because I read them, I remember as a kid, there was an agent who, or not an agent, a military guy who, what was it called? I think the book's called The Day After Roswell, where he was like, this is all true, and here's what I saw, and here's what others saw. And it sold a bajillion copies.
Yeah, know? Of course. And meanwhile, the guy still sounds like a person that makes race cars out of his poop. You know, like, he just sounds squirrel nuts crazy.
It's true. That's part of the intrigue, I think, of it, is that to believe in it, you are automatically deemed crazy.
Yeah, which the problem is I totally believe in it. And everything.
Nutter!
Yeah.
But, no, there's a possibility out there. There's definitely a possibility. Anyone who doesn't think there's a possibility is ridiculous, but I don't think they would automatically fall in with the American government and be in a giant capitalist conspiracy to create... No, that's probably not happening. You'd think they'd just be like, hey, we're here. You know? Like,
well, hopefully we've crudded up our environment enough and raped enough of our natural resources that they wouldn't want our planet.
But see, have you ever seen the movie The Arrival?
No.
With Charlie Sheen?
No.
One of my okay, I'm going to give that to you before you
That leave. Was actually directed by David Tui, who did Pitch Black, which was last week's instant film review.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
That is one of my favorite alien movies of all time, actually. And it talks about how the aliens have come here specifically to pollute. They're the reason why we're polluting our environment, because our current climate is too hostile for them. It's too cold. So they're intentionally pumping out greenhouse gases in order to survive.
They're terraforming our...
They are.
That's funny.
It's a really cool idea. The Alien Arrival 2, not nearly as good a movie. But the first one, really cool.
Okay. Y'all watch it sometime with the lights on.
That one, it doesn't matter so much if you watch it with the lights on.
No, if you're scared of aliens. Like, the things that terrify me most. Sharks, glitter, stickers, and aliens.
Nice.
Yeah, the irrational fear of glitter and stickers is something I struggle with daily.
So if Matt makes you mad, now you know. You can send him a glitter bomb. That's a thing now.
I know it's a thing now, but I will find you and I will kill you. I will go to prison for this.
You know, those are supposed to be completely untraceable.
Okay, well, that's fine, because somebody's going to want to gloat about it. It's the first, like, if I don't say anything about me getting glitter bombed, the first person that asked me about it was the one that did it.
See, this is the kind of fuel that I need, because then I send you one, and I have, like, be like, hey, Lucas, do you know Matt's, afraid of glitter? You should ask him about it. So then I know after it's been confirmed sent to you, Lucas is like, so what do you know about glitter? And then you're choking him Bart Simpson style.
I just would lean right in and punch him in the jaw. Oh, it'd be awful.
Sorry, Lucas.
Sorry, Lucas, and sorry, America, for this episode of the Rancor's Brothel. We'll be back next week with more geekiness. I don't know. Are we playing a game next week? What are we doing?
I don't know. We'll figure it out. Okay. We'll have to talk about it.
We will. So see you next week here at the brothel. Hail Hydra.
Excelsior.
You're ridiculous.